The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Bob Herrig with ESPN Golf, their senior golf writer. See Bob on the Morning Sports Center a lot, and also jumps in with Stephen A. and Greeny and all those guys on the morning show at ESPN. Bob is plugged in on the golf scene. Waste Management Open is here this week. Bob will join us at 10:20. Solomon Wilcots with Pro Football Focus, SiriusXM NFL Radio. Solomon does a lot around the NFL and, of course, at PFF. I want him to just, I'm just going to throw names at Solomon Wilcots. Like, who is this guy and who is that? I'm not going to give you examples. But rather than just do the whole Brady's amazing and Mahomes is amazing and Arians coach with the Cardinals and Tyreek Hill's fast and all that stuff, we got it. But there's some names, like if I say Eric Fisher to him, I think that's a pretty significant name to know as you sit and watch the Super Bowl on Sunday. So what is the story with Eric Fisher? Why do I need to know or even care about that name? And there's other players too. I'm going to throw some names at him that just nobody talks about unless they really pay attention. Guys that are in the secondary for Tampa Bay that got torched by Tyreek Hill the first time. So I like doing that around the Super Bowl. It's just, look, Pro Football Focus, fill me in on that guy. So we will have Solly with us. That comes up at 10:35. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I watched the Suns last night take care of it at the very end. Back and forth game. It was fun. Diana Taurasi is coming back. Spring training is 11 days away. And the owners and players hate each other and don't trust each other. And Patrick Reed will not be here at the Open. So that's very unfortunate. Jordan Spurgeon is with us. Spurge just jumps on in. He finished his show. What did you guys talk about today on your show over at Blaze at ASU? Oh, I don't hear you. Turn your mic on, you amateur. Come on. Wow. Man, you want to be in this business? Yeah,
I knew that was coming eventually.
I do that. So what's going on? What is on campus you guys are buzzing about?
Yeah, as far as my show, it was very Super Bowl heavy. I had a kid from the University of Florida that I've connected with call in, and we talked a lot about the game. So that was really fun, make connections. And on campus, people are just – I've read some articles this week from some of the great – like organizations, State Press, Downtown Devil, talking about how to watch Super Bowl safely. So people are talking, you know, about different ways to get together and watch the game this weekend.
How are you going to do it?
I live on my own, so I'm probably going to be by myself. Maybe a friend or two, if they want to come down, we'll hang out. But I usually just watch it on my own lately, so we'll see how that
goes. You had COVID already.
Yeah, I had COVID, so I don't mind having a friend or two over. So if someone wants to come over and have a good time and watch the game, and more than down to that. But I love watching football, so if I watch it by myself, that's totally fine too.
Are you going to do like a Zoom party or any of that stuff? Or
not that too much.
No, no. Yeah. Are you into the halftime show?
Usually. Usually. I'm not a big weekend fan. So he seems like a performer, so it seems like it'd be fun. But I don't know. I remember last year's was the memes of the internet with Shakira and all them last year. So we'll see if we get anything like that, at least out of it, that people talk about for a while.
I would think there'd be a lot of comedy online this year because everybody's so pent up, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, memes on what the halftime show looks like, I would think that would just be more entertaining than, you know, the Super Bowl. To me, it's always the championship games, AFC and NFC championship games usually are better than Super Bowl, usually. The game itself, there's times where it lives up to all the hype, but more often than not, it's like, okay, it is just commercials. It is just, and I'll watch and I'll be all into it because we got to do this stuff, but it just feels like this year, because everybody's pent up and stuck at home or has gone through COVID or they've lost their jobs, or it's just like this week, this Sunday, I think some people are just going to say, screw it. I'm just going to have a great old time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not one that ever says like someone needs to watch sports, but if there ever is a time for that, I feel like after everything, this game is like much needed for a lot of people to watch and just enjoy and have that Sunday to just chill. And you know me, I keep working so hard, so I need to like take the Sunday to chill myself. So I need this to just sit on the couch all day, eat some food, watch all the entertainment, watch the game, and just enjoy life.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. All right. Get out of here. Have a good day. All right. See you. There's Spurge on campus. You know, I really think Devin Booker hitting the shot last night is it's one of those deals where it's a it's not even halfway point of the season, but it's Devin Booker hitting a three to win the game. It's one of those that will be shown over and over and over. Chris Paul was terrific again last night. He had 34. And Devin Booker, he's not been the one crying about not making All-Star games. That's left for fans to complain about. Devin Booker could go score 70 against the Celtics, and no one's going to care in the NBA because he's on a lousy team and just shooting the ball a ton. When you win games like that, and you become a team that is in a playoff position, then all of a sudden it's like, you know, he does deserve to be at that next level, meaning All-Star games. It's very crowded out in the West. But would you take Devin Booker this year over Damian Lillard? Would you take Devin Booker over Steph Curry? Would you take Devin Booker over LeBron James? I can go down the list of all the great players. You know, James Harden is now not out in the West. Russell Westbrook is now not out in the West. And so suddenly there is more room, more space for both. Chris Paul deserves to be in the All-Star game, and Devin Booker deserves to be in the All-Star game. DeAndre Ayton does not deserve to be in the All-Star game. He doesn't. DeAndre Ayton, I would take Jokic all day long. He's just like, come on, guys, let's just not go down the path of, oh, he's a son, he needs to go to the All-Star game. No, he's not even close. If I'm taking a big, I got a big in Denver that I'll take all day long. But it was a fun game to watch. They take two in Dallas. And it came down to the bitter end. But I think, to me, yesterday, I found myself really enamored that Diana Taurasi would say, I'm going to come back and keep playing. I don't know how many of you watch women's basketball. I was the first voice of the Phoenix Mercury. The original voice of the Phoenix Mercury, it's me. I'm pretty proud of that. Jerry Colangelo asked me, he's like, hey, we've got the WNBA here. I'd like for you to do the games. I said, why not? I'm bumping around on Southwest flights, three to a row with Cheryl Miller and Nancy Lieberman, and seeing women's basketball was played below the rim. A lot of people weren't acceptive of it. The WNBA to this day is still something that the NBA is having to fund in certain parts of the country. It's laughed and ridiculed and mocked. It still doesn't get great TV ratings. But it's very important. As someone who coached my daughters in women's basketball, Diana Taurasi was one of those that I looked at and said, I've got to have Diana Taurasi in Phoenix for my daughters to see. I would take my daughters to go watch her play. I think it's pretty funny. She has her own Twitter handle, Diana Taurasi's Bun. I think that's very funny. And so for her to say, I'm coming back for another year, that's awesome. Or 3 years, actually. U of A hired Teddy Bruschi yesterday. He's not leaving ESPN, but he's going to be the right-hand man to Jed Fish. U of A yesterday gets a verbal commitment, again, from another top high school kid, Amon Allen, the safety from Highland, who said, I'm going to the U of A. U of A keeps doing things in local terms. Now, does it equate to victories? I don't know. If I talk to anybody at ASU, it's like, well, we didn't want him anyways. We didn't want this guy anyways. And I'm just like, really? You know, let's just see how this plays out. But U of A has made some moves here. I know the Fish hire was laughed at first, but they made some moves that are pretty impressive to me, at least to get some buzz going. And spring training is 11 days away. April 1st is opening day. The owners and players continue to look at each other and say, read between the lines. And until they can figure it out, you know, we're going to have labor unrest. The collective bargaining agreement in Major League Baseball expires at the end of this regular season. And so if they can't get themselves together on the same page, and I think it's smart to move the start of the season back. I really do. Vaccinations are coming in. You can get more people showing up at games if you just give it about another month to 6 weeks, push the start of the season back. Players say no. Owners are sitting over there on the other side. The owners are the ones that need to step forward, in my opinion, here and say, let's come back with a different agreement. Let's try to work through this. This is not the end of the world. I don't think what's going on right now between the two sides impacts the collective bargaining agreement later on this year. But just know that the labor piece, there is none when it comes to Major League Baseball. And that's important. You want to watch the games? There's much more to it than that. Bob Herrig joins us next, ESPN Golf senior writer. Waste Management Open Week, we'll talk with Bob and then Solomon Wilcox. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's turn our attention now to the Waste Management Open. It is supposed to be 80 degrees today and just beautiful week ahead at TPC Scottsdale, allowing in just 4,000 fans tops. And I think that number may have been reduced as the week goes on. We are not out there doing our show as we like to do. It's just that's the way it is this year with the folks at the Thunderbirds who do a terrific job. We want to focus in on the sport, though, with ESPN senior golf writer Bob Herrig for a few minutes to kind of preview where the tour is at this year, how things are going, so on and so forth. We're not going to talk about Patrick Reed. I'm just kidding. We will talk about Patrick Reed. Because, Bob, that's all you've been being asked about, sure, right? Like, you've probably done dozens of shows on Patrick Reed here in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, it's been quite the topic of conversation here of late. And, you know, it's funny. I was looking back as I was writing over the weekend. You know, the last time Patrick won was last February in Mexico, in Mexico City. And he had a rule stuff in there, too. Not that week, but there was still the fallout from the Bahamas, and there was other people. You know, Brooks Koepka had been outspoken, and I mean, it's just you know, it's a terrible thing to have be part of your reputation, and frankly, you know, that's really the main reason why you know, why I think he found himself in the trouble he did this past weekend.
I tell you, I'm watching CBS and it was like presidential topic. You know, they brought everybody in. They triple boxed it. They quadruple boxed it. And there's just this underlying tone, even that the broadcasters were not fond of what he did. And I'm just curious, on that side, in the profession, his colleagues, is he just not liked? That's the question I've had fans ask me. Is he just not liked by his colleagues and the like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say that Patrick is sort of a loner, does his own thing, doesn't have a lot of friends, and some of these issues have been off-putting to his peers. Mm-hmm. You know, you just go back to, and look, I can't say with certainty that you know, they don't like him, or there's people that, you know, they hate him or whatever. But I think there's a very, very telling example that occurred at the Ryder Cup in 2018. And, you know, Jordan Spieth and Reed had made a great partnership at the Ryder Cup in 14 and in 16. They had played together in a President's Cup or two. They had a very, very strong record together. And Spieth basically said, I don't want to be part of it. And so what did they do? They split them up, and Reed ended up playing with Tiger, and it was a disaster. And Spieth played with Ricky Fowler, I believe, and they were actually pretty good. You know, but there was always this question of, did you just take away one of your best teams because a couple of guys didn't get along? You know, and I think that speaks to some of the issues. Like, it's already come up. You know, Reed should probably be on the Ryder Cup team this year. Well, who are they going to put him with? You know, so I think that does sort of, you know, give you a clue as his standing with his peers. And look, rule stuff does not go over well out there. It's a game you're supposed to police yourself. You know, people are expecting you to do the right thing. I'm not saying he didn't do the right thing the other day, but because of the circumstances, and you know, when a guy picks up his ball like he did, that's going to bring questions into play, and here we are.
Yeah, it's the optics of it, and yep. He could not play. I mean, this is probably the year he should be playing here because there's no fans around. He could not do TPC Scottsdale in a normal year. I can't see it. Could you? 100,000, 170,000 people trying to not say a word to him while he's walking into 16?
It's a great point. There's no question it would be really hard. You know, he caught it at the President's Cup that, you know, in 2019, the week after the Bahamas. You know, he, in fact, it got so bad that his caddy went after somebody, you know, and look, you know, I don't condone that either. You know, in the case in what happened in the Bahamas, he was penalized for it. You know, he, in what happened on Saturday, he did nothing actually to warrant a penalty, because you are allowed to mark your ball and pick it up to check to see if it's embedded. And so if the, then he called over the rules official. If he was going to do that, he probably should have just left it there.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, if the rules official had not agreed with him, he would have told him to put it back. No penalty. You put it back in the same exact spot. That's why you put the tee there to mark it. And he would have had to play it out of there. So, you know, that's the thing about this, is there was not even a penalty involved. But the question we'll never know is how bad was the lie? Would he have been able to get it anywhere near the green or on the green like he did with the shot that he played from the drop? He didn't hit that particularly close, but then he holed it and made par. So in a weird sort of way, that makes it worse, because he made a par that probably would have been really, really hard to fathom him doing in the other situation. You know, he probably wouldn't have been able to get it anywhere near that close and even had a chance. So
that's a good point.
You know, and that's where that adds to it. Now, of course, he went on to bogey three holes coming in. I don't necessarily think him making a par there is what won him the tournament. You know, it didn't give him some great, great advantage. It's not like he knocked it stiff and tapped it in, and he, you know, he would have been chunking into the bunker, taking three more to get down necessarily. But again, as you noted, the optics, it's a huge part of this.
ESPN senior golf writer Bob Herrig with us for a couple of minutes. Waste Management Open is this week at TPC Scottsdale. Limited crowds, and maybe even more limited as the week goes on. I'm going to throw some names at you. Just give me a thumbnail for the fans. So Paul Casey won in Dubai. He's not here. Brooks Koepka missed three straight cuts. He is here. What is going on with Brooks Koepka?
Yeah, I think this is a combination of the injury issues he dealt with at the end of 2019 into last year. Sounds like he never quite got that right. You know, maybe got into some bad habits. You know, now he's decided to, you know, he's parted ways with his coach. It's a lot of changes. You know, I there might be a little bit of a crisis of confidence going on too. You know, because he really only had a couple of good tournaments in all of 2020. And I think hindsight being what it is, he might have been better off getting the knee taken care of while golf was shut down, as opposed to waiting. I think he thought he could rehab it and strengthen and get better. And then when he came back out, you know, the results weren't there. It was still bothering him. And he ended up missing a major over it. You know, he ended up missing the U.S. Open. I just think he's still trying to battle his way back there.
Rory McIlroy is playing for the first time ever here in the Waste Management. A thought or two on Rory coming into this event and why here?
Yeah, well, Rory, one of the reasons for there, I believe, I can't speak to this exactly, but, you know, these guys are required to add an event they haven't played in 4 years, at least once a year, unless they play 25. And Rory is never going to play 25 on the PGA Tour because he also plays in Europe. So he's typically got to pick an event that he hasn't played before. And he's made it a point this year. He wants to play a lot. It seems, you know, he's playing like, he's playing 7 of 8 weeks. You know, if you go back to Abu Dhabi last week, this week, he's taking next week off. And then he's playing four straight after that. So I think he just felt like, hey, look, I might as well. This fits in. I'll play an event I haven't played before. And so that makes sense from that standpoint. And, you know, this is the beauty of that rule, is it gets a guy to play a place he might not have otherwise played.
Right.
And then, you know, if he likes it, he might come back, you know? So, you know, Roy's had a lot of reasons to skip Phoenix over the years. You know, some years it's been opposite an event in the Middle East or he's been over there. But as far as his game, you know, he's struggling with final rounds. You know, he's gone now more than a year without winning. He had a great chance in Abu Dhabi, wasn't able to get it done. He was sort of in the mix this past weekend. You know, he was only a couple back going in the final round, wasn't able to do it. So with good weather on that golf course, I would think that, you know, Rory's, you know, a good bet maybe to be up there again this week.
Before I get you out of here, and I appreciate your time, Bob, as always, no Dustin Johnson, no Tiger, no Phil. And these are names that have rolled through the years. In particular, Phil has stopped playing here. He's gone to Abu Dhabi at least last year. And it's caused I don't want to say a fracture with fans here. They're just used to seeing Phil, who went to Arizona State. They want to see Tiger here. He came back about 4 or 5 years ago, really struggled. No Dustin Johnson here. Is Phoenix one of those places that's just not going to get those players as often because of what's going on overseas and the purses over there, from your view?
Well, you know, Phil and Dustin Johnson are playing in Saudi Arabia, which is kind of controversial in its own right. And I remember asking Phil about it last year before going over there.
That's right.
You know,
I mean,
you know, and he made it more about, you know, like people were making a big deal out of him skipping Phoenix. And I was like, I think it's more, Phil, that you're going to Saudi Arabia. You know, there's a lot there. You know, that's it's controversial that the European Tour even plays there. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you have 10, 12 named guys decide to go. They're all getting paid. And, you know, you hear the argument, well, hey, look, the tour plays in China. They play, you know, and I get that. You know, if you want to drill down, you could find fault with everywhere, I suppose. But my big distinction is that tournament is funded and staged by the Saudi government. So they're actually directly taking payments from the Saudi government. And, you know, say what you want, but we all know that regime is not the most well-regarded. You know, they've got a lot of human rights issues there. Yeah, of course, they have human rights issues in China, too. But the events that are played in China are not state-run events.
Mm.
So I'm surprised in a sense, you know, given Phil's loyalty to the area, given the fact that you'd like to think Phil doesn't need the money, you know. But, I mean, look, he plays two events in California, goes all the way to the Middle East, you know, which is, what, a 10-hour time difference from California, maybe probably 12 from California, and then he's going to come back and play Pebble Beach next week.
That's right.
I mean,
not only is it
just kind of, you know, the whole sort of controversial aspect of going to Saudi Arabia, but you put yourself through a grind,
yeah.
You know, and so As far as the not going to Phoenix thing and having the competitions, certainly that is an issue. And you know, look, I think there are some guys that, frankly, now obviously it's not an issue this year, but I think there are some guys who don't like the big crowds, you know, who are somewhat put off by it. So you know, they just feel like, okay, I'm not going to deal with that, you know. So that has, I think that's been an issue with some guys in the past. They might not say it, you know, but, you know, I'm not sure that Tiger wants to deal with it at this point in his life, which
right.
would have made going there this year a great idea. You know,
yeah.
Obviously he can't right now because of his back.
Yeah.
You know, the some of the greatest things about that tournament are maybe a detriment to some guys.
No, I agree with you on that, and I've seen it and heard it, and some guys just don't need to come here. It's just better off not coming here. There's too many distractions even off the golf course to stay focused for several days. I promise
right.
This will be the last thing. Tiger and the Masters, what do you think right now as we're sitting here talking in early February?
Well, I think there's a really good chance for the Masters. I mean, there's a reason he went and got that done when he did. you know, as soon as possible after that event. He played with his son right there, right before Christmas. Yep. It was done on December 23rd, which we didn't know at first. I mean, so, you know, you'd think, ah, well, maybe wait till after Christmas. Well, no, he wanted to get it done to give himself enough time. And so what, that's been, it's been like 6 weeks now. You know, I think 6 weeks when this coming tomorrow, it'll be 6 weeks. And it's the type of thing where the first time he had a microdiscectomy, he came back in 2.5 months. So that was too soon. He might not have been ready. I think he knows better now how to best prepare to come back. We don't know to what level this was comparatively. You know, was it less painful? Was there less issues? And so, you know, it's 6 weeks. 2 weeks from now is his event, which he's not going to play. 2 weeks after that would be Bay Hill or the Arnold Palmer. That to me is the earliest he could come back. That's 10 weeks. 2 weeks after that is the Players Championship, which is 3 months. So that's still a full month before the Masters, or 3 weeks before the Masters.
Got it.
I really think the Masters is okay. You know, assuming there's no big setbacks, I've heard he's hitting balls. You know, it's the type of thing, it's easy for us to say, yeah, you know, he walked out of there that day. It's not even an overnight thing. Easy for us to say. I mean, I'm sure he wasn't feeling great, and I'm sure he wasn't allowed to hit balls for 10 days or 2 weeks. Now the question, though, is can he ramp up? Once again, he's missing competition. He's missing tournament play. He really lacked that last year. All those things are a factor.
Good stuff, as always. And hopefully next year you're out here when things are wide open again and we can see each other in person. Bob, appreciate the visit today. Thanks.
Yeah, love the tournament. You know, I think we're all missing. I'm thrilled to get to see any number of fans out there this week. You know, I know it's not going to be the same, but God, it's if you watch the golf tournament over the weekend, it just misses so much with nobody there. So I'm glad they've even got a couple thousand out there. It's going to make it that much better.
There's Bob Herrig, ESPN senior golf writer. We appreciate his time and insights. And we're back with Solomon Wilcots on the Super Bowl after this timeout. All right, it is Super Bowl week, and what I want to do here with Solomon Wilcots from PFF and SiriusXM NFL Radio is just throw some names, because this is the year. A lot of you know, or at least you think you know, but there's some names that when you're getting towards Sunday, you're like, why should I care that Eric Fisher is not on the football field? So Solomon, of course, can fill in a lot of blanks, drop knowledge. So let's just start with Eric Fisher, Solomon.
Yeah, Eric Fisher is the left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs, who will not be playing in Super Bowl 55. Now, this is a guy that was a former first overall pick in the draft and really the pillar post to that offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs. In fact, the Chiefs will be without both of their starting offensive tackles, right? Mitchell Schwartz, as well as Eric Fisher, who you just mentioned. Mike Remmers is going to replace at the left tackle position. And listen, I believe this is a team, the Kansas City Chiefs, football.
Yeah.
Now, this defensive front for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is formidable. They can get after the quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. But it is his mobility, and it is the design of the offense by the coordinator, Eric Bieniemy, head coach Andy Reid, that I think can buy time for Patrick Mahomes to create big plays in the passing game. I think this is one area that you got to pay attention to. But I wouldn't say, Brad, that I'm overly concerned about the Kansas City Chiefs offensive line without their left tackle. I would be more concerned some other teams, but not with the Kansas City Chiefs.
A lot of people will be watching saying Gronk, Gronk, and that's fine. I sit here and say Travis Kelce, Travis Kelce, Travis Kelce. They're going to hear a lot about the tight ends in this game from Jim Nantz and Tony Romo and Tracy Wolfson and the whole crew. But let's just focus in on Kelce, because I look at him and say, who's going to stop this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good question, because Gronk was the guy maybe 3 years ago, right? He was at the top when you talked about tight ends in the National Football League. But there's no doubt Travis Kelce has ascended the throne. He is the best tight end in all of football, and he goes about getting it done differently than Gronk did, is that big physical presence down inside the red zone, guy who can block in the run game. Travis Kelce is like your power forward on a basketball court. He can sort of overwhelm you with his size down inside the red zone, but he can outrun you in space just like a wide receiver. One of the most productive tight ends over the last 5 years in the National Football League. He makes that offense go along with Tyreek Hill.
Why am I going to hear the name Carlton Davis so much with Tyreek Hill running by him, through him, around him like he did when they met back in November? Why are fans going to hear that name so much?
Yeah, because Todd Bowles, if he doesn't do something different than what he did week 12 and what you talked about when Tyreek Hill beat Carlton Davis for over 200 yards receiving in the first quarter alone, Brad. And so, yeah, if they go back with that type of coverage, man-to-man, Carlton Davis on Tyreek Hill, you'll hear his name a lot. And it won't be good for the Davis family, that's for sure. So I think they're going to have to come up with a whole new defense, a whole new design, if they have any shot of trying to stop Tyreek Hill.
Two other names or two other groups to talk with Solomon Wilcott about for a couple of minutes. Why are we going to hear Eric Bieniemy and Todd Bowles about coaching so much in this Super Bowl?
Because both guys are phenomenal when it comes to being coordinator and designing plays on their side of the ball. For instance, Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator with the Kansas City Chiefs. It's going to be his job to protect Patrick Mahomes and design an offense for Mahomes to stay upright, get the ball out of his hands quickly against Todd Bowles' defense, who you know is going to want to blitz Patrick Mahomes. However, Eric Bieniemy has been very good at designing blitz protection for Mahomes. Mahomes has been good under pressure. 17 touchdowns, zero interceptions against blitzing defenses during the 2020 season. However, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, their defense under Todd Bowles, they're the fourth best defense when it comes to delivering pressure packages. So you really have both coordinators operating at a very high level on their respective sides of the ball.
Before I get you out of here, who's a name that I didn't bring up? Because I'm not going to bring up Mahomes and Brady. So who's a name that you're like, Brad, this guy or this position group, better fans are going to hear about them a lot, good or bad?
It's Scotty Miller. I mean, he's everybody's bet, at least mine, to be able to deliver a big play. And maybe for a guy that you don't expect to get it from, he's not a starter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But you saw it in the play just before halftime at Lambeau Field against Green Bay, the 39-yard touchdown pass caught from Tom Brady. The guy is a vertical threat. He's as good as any of the other receivers in Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. He is a formidable weapon that Tom Brady feels very comfortable getting the ball to. And I'm not so sure the Chiefs have a defender who can run with Scotty Miller.
Okay. You got a prediction on this one, Solomon. Everybody's asking for predictions.
Listen, as much as I believe in the Kansas City Chiefs and their high-scoring offense, I just think that Tampa's a more well-rounded team that's playing better on both offense and defense. The way their offense and defensive line dominated against Green Bay, I think they have a chance to doing the same, particularly without those two starting offensive tackles for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Appreciate the time, the insight, and dropping knowledge. Thanks, Solomon.
Brad, thanks for having me. Greatly appreciate it.